Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. We are excited and grateful to be here with you. My name is Heather Choate and I'm here with Mark Johnston. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
Good. Yeah, I'm loving the warmer weather. Kids are done with school. We homeschool, but they're still done with like the regular curriculum. So a lot more of a free schedule. And I like that. How about you guys?
I don't know. I don't always like things getting warmer like this. I mean, it's nice to get to the pool and all, but my argument is, you know, you can always put more clothes on when it's getting colder, but you can't always take more clothes off when it's getting
unless you live in Brazil. I'll just say that.
At least my kids don't like the policy of going too much with too little clothing.
Exactly. Well, wherever you are in this world and whatever the weather is or the dress code, we're excited and grateful to have you guys here. We're going to be sharing with you today how to revive a stale marriage, specifically five ways to help you revive a stale marriage. Before we get to that, though, we're going to share our client win of the week, which comes with permission from Tim. Mark, you want to share what Tim shared with us?
Yeah. So Tim was talking about here, he goes on and says he's doing some things different over the last few days that his coach asked him to do. So Tim was working with one of our team members, Daphne, and she had some suggestions for him. He says, it's made a big difference in her responses. She used to not respond to my text messages, even if I asked her to call me. But with the changes I've made, she has only not called me one time. Big difference was me telling her to let me know if she wanted to talk. That's such a small little adjustment there that I would love to hear how her day went. He goes on and says, with some changes to the wording, each day she has not failed to call me. He goes on and says, I sent her a text this morning to say good morning. Hope your morning is going well and to call me if you want to talk. And she called and said that she wasn't going to call that morning. But when she got that text, she went ahead anyway. Basically, Tim here is saying, and these are his words, not my own here. She says, hey, listen to your coach. They know what they're talking about. He says that he's been cussed out and, you know, in very extreme ways over the last couple months. But in the last few days, she hasn't cursed at him even one single time. And so he once again says, not my words, but his, listen to your coach. They know what they're talking about. Listen to their trainings. It works. I like this because it's just such a simple little thing. And sometimes we don't even see those little tiny adjustments that we need to make, you know, within my own marriage. Like sometimes I don't even see these little things that I might do with my communication with my wife, Jen, that might bother her, but you know, we have some good communication and she feels like she can give me that feedback. And sometimes I just need a little, you know, kick in the head here or there just to kind of get on the right track. And sometimes it can make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of this, he talks a little bit about her narrative, which we talk a lot about here in our PATH method. So if you guys haven't heard our PATH method, it's really different than anything else out there. And like he said, it works. In his own words, he says it works. He's doing it himself. He's using it in his own marriage. She had a really toxic, said that he was really toxic to her. That was her story or her narrative about him. And so we all have a story or narrative about our spouse and they have a story or a narrative about us. And if that narrative isn't positive, which more often than not, it's not when your spouse is pulling away, right? When they're wanting a divorce or having an affair. And so what we really want to do is shift some of that narrative. And so that's exactly what our PATH process helps you do, is to identify what their narrative is, what are the underlying reasons why they're saying that, and then how to pattern interrupt and help them let go of that narrative so that they're no longer seeing you through the lens of that old story or that old belief, they're seeing you with like fresh eyes. They're willing to see you for who you really are. And they're willing to consider the possibility of being happy with you. Now we go through a lot of those milestones and those markers and help guide you every step of the way. And like Tim says here, when you do what the coach tells you to do, what Mark or the coaches here say, it works. It just does. And that's why we've been able to help so many couples just like you guys to turn around what you might feel like is a hopeless situation. Now, when we're talking about a stale marriage, not so much of a desperate, hopeless situation, but things are starting to deteriorate. So in our podcast, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, Mark, we talked about that pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. What was it exactly called?
It's KNAPP, or it's spelled K-N-A-P-P, but KNAPP, KNAPP's relationship model.
Yeah, that's the one. And we're talking about like the intimacy going up the scale and then intimacy going down the scale. And so where would you say a stale marriage fits on that model?
Well, specifically, you know, if we're going descending down, there's differentiation, then there's circumscribing, and then there's stagnation is that stage. It sounds an awful lot like stale. But yeah, I think that's roughly where it fits. And the stagnation is this period where this phase, as a couple comes apart, where you don't really talk about the deep things because it's just not, it's not rewarding anymore, or it's like it's been pushed aside and it's just not fruitful at all to talk about those things that are really important. And I think that's kind of like oftentimes when there's a stale relationship, a lot of times what has been pushed aside is a lot of that intimacy, that closeness, that connection, that fun.
Yeah, agreed. So leave us a comment here. Let us know, why do you think marriages become stale? If you're experiencing this level of staleness or stagnation in your marriage, it means that you're on the decline. Maybe they aren't completely done yet. They haven't hit that bottom level yet, but it's no longer really rewarding to engage in the relationship or to have a lot of intimacy and have a lot of connection. And so what do you guys think, and what has your experience been that has led to this in your marriage right now? And then we will coach you guys. I read every single one of your comments here on Facebook and YouTube, even though we have a huge audience. We respond to every single one of those. So let us know in the comments, what do you think has led up to this? So Mark, because we've helped so many thousands of couples, what have you seen that really creates this situation of a stale marriage?
So I think we mentioned it just a moment ago. I do think that a lot of times the interesting or rewarding parts of the relationship simply aren't prioritized or perhaps even allowed. Hmm. I mean, we've all kind of heard those jokes, you know, we're going to talk about sex for a moment. Like the stereotype here is that, okay, the husband wants some sex and the wife is like, oh no, I have a headache, I'm tired, or whatnot. I mean, this is one example of this sort of situation going on, but a lot of times there might be other bids for attention. You know, the wife might be coming to her husband saying, hey, why don't you come and talk to me? Why don't we sit down and cuddle and watch a movie? Why don't we go and garden together? Whatever it happens to be, there are these bids for attention, I think is, you know, one thing, and that go unmet. So there's lots of good reasons that this happens, right? Heather, I don't think like consciously a lot of couples are like, no, I'm going to turn my husband or my wife down. That's not what they're aiming for here. But I think you and I know, as well as many, many other people, that sometimes things get in the way. Like a lot of times children, right? Mm-hmm. Children can get in the way of a really happy romantic relationship if you're not careful. So I do think that is one thing that causes this, is because the relationship hasn't been prioritized, because like careers or kids or household maintenance or financial issues, they tend to be like a more prominent or a squeaky wheel sort of situation. Those tend to be put in the forefront, and the nice stuff with the marriage gets put in the back burner because, you know what, we can do that another time. It's not as important. Mm-hmm. And eventually it just gets easier to not to ask your partner to spend time with you or to engage with them.
Yeah. What happens in the other part? So we talked about when it's maybe no longer prioritized, maybe you're more distracted, maybe there's just a lot of other bids for attention in other areas. What about when it's not allowed? I've had an interesting conversation with several couples lately. And interestingly enough, they're all from the same religious background, the same like religious culture, mm-hmm. As I am. And it's this sexless marriage that sex is actually no longer allowed. And this is a need that's just not being met. In fact, it's now it's being put on this line. Like there's this boundary of, no, we don't have sex. What happens when it's no longer allowed?
Well, that's tough. And especially in with that kind of circumstance, because you get all sorts of complications with like cultural morals. And I know what you're talking about, like, especially when you get into some really conservative groups, you know, sometimes sex itself could be taboo or just certain wants or needs could become, quote unquote, a little bit more taboo, even though that might not be the intention of that group. Some people get it into their heads that, okay, we don't need this as much, or to want this more is wrong. That's a completely other, like very big complicating factor. You know, I've spoken with many couples who come from much more conservative cultural backgrounds. They might, you know, Middle Eastern backgrounds, or perhaps in some ways, even Asian cultures might have certain views on how men and women interact that are different from Western expectations here. And depending on those cultural norms, or at least how the individuals interpret it, you're right. Like some things might be seen as it's wrong. It's wrong to want more sex, or it's wrong to want to get out and do some things on your own. Mm-hmm. It might be, culturally speaking, wrong for the wife to have a life of her own or to develop a career if you're going very conservative in some areas. Mm-hmm. And that's, we could open up a whole can of worms there, Heather. I feel like that is a very different topic, but you're right in that when it becomes not allowed, mm-hmm. you can have a very stale relationship, because here's this gaping hole of a need that has no outlet.
Right.
And what I typically see is, like we're talking about today, the relationship gets to this really stale, uninteresting, unfulfilling point and just kind of sits there indefinitely, but it's definitely not going to be fulfilling, or the need comes out in unhealthy ways, whether that's affairs or marital dissolution or any number of other areas.
Right, exactly. And sometimes there's some mental or emotional trauma or things like that that needs to be worked through as well. So this can happen and come about from many different things. Mm-hmm. It could just be, you know, that you haven't been prioritizing time for each other and you got distracted. It could be that, you know, your culture or your religious viewpoints make something unacceptable or unallowed, or it could be that there's some trauma and they're saying, no, that's too painful for me to do that. And so all of those things need to be handled with care. There's also another element to this, right? So we've got that maybe it's not prioritized or allowed, which is making the marriage stale, but it also can start to feel like been there, done that, right? And other things are more interesting or exciting, right? And so this is when we go into kind of like roommate mode. And this typically hits in a relationship kind of about the benchmark that you and I are in, Mark, with your marriage and with Jen and my marriage with Ben. We're at the peak of work and kids. And, you know, we've been kind of doing the same thing for a little while. There's some studies that show, you know, most marriages end about 7 or 8 years, but then you get into this like plateau point if you stay married longer than that. And oftentimes we'll hear couples like, we've been married 20 years, 25 years. And it just feels like we've just lost the passion. This is oftentimes a lot of what we're hearing when we're hearing like, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Like we've just kind of been doing the same thing for a long time.
I can remember a close friend of Jen and mine. They had gotten into this plateau. And so the husband was like, okay, hey, look, I need something interesting in my life. And so he started working on his motorcycle a whole lot. And we would get all the stories. We would get all the complaints on the back end and be like, why is he always working on his motorcycle? Why doesn't he have time for me? And I kept thinking to myself, well, okay, if there's a lot of complaints about not spending time together and there's other things that are more interesting, of course, he's going to go spend time working on his motorcycle or playing video games or going out to the bar or hanging out with friends, because, you know, you haven't spent time to make the relationship interesting and rewarding.
Mm-hmm. And there's accountability on both sides there. It's not like saying one person's the one doing all of this and like you're a boring person, so you should just be more fun so that they want to be around you more. No, that's not what it really is. But there is this like, you know, it can get mundane. You've heard all their stories. You've heard all their jokes, right? If you don't have anything new or exciting anymore, it can just feel like you just hit this plateau, right? One of the fun things that, well, we're going to talk about how to break through this in a minute, but I'm just going to share it now because I can't help it. but to ask your spouse some questions as if you're dating for the first time again, because if you think about it, you are not the same person as when you first got married, and your spouse is actually not the same person as when you first got married. Mm-hmm. Ben and I are very different than when we were in our early 20s, right? So even getting to know him in like the silly little questions that you ask, like when you're dating, like, hey, what's your favorite food? Like, what do you really love to eat? What's delicious to you? Hey, what's your favorite thing to do? Like, you know, what's your favorite color? And even that can change. And that might seem kind of surface level, but it's amazing when you actually ask those questions and show interest in them and what they value, what their opinion is, what their experience is, that kind of reignites that. And you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know that about you. On our last date, I just like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know that was true about you, Ben. I just learned two new things about you. And that was really fun, a really fun way to kind of break through and have some of that newness and that excitement in the relationship. So how many of you guys have experienced this, right? How many of you have felt frustrated when you're trying to create connection with your spouse and you just feel like you just keep getting turned down? And I'm sure we've all experienced some level of that, right? How many of you felt that there's simply too much in your life to really be able to focus on the nice parts of your marriage? Some of, you know, sometimes this comes across as like, when I get the raise or when I get the new job or when the kids graduate or when they go to preschool or when they're done with this, then we'll be able to have time for each other, or then I'll be able to give more thought to this. In fact, I actually just heard this from my husband this week. I'm going to call him out on this a little bit publicly. I was like, so you don't think our communication is really great? Because we do like a check-in every week. And he's like, no, I don't think our communication is really great, but I don't actually want to talk about that right now because we're trying to buy a house and I'm starting a new job and I've got this new career. I was like, hang on. I'm hearing that you want to like wait to work on a relationship for like 3 to 6 months. He was kind of saying that, like, I've got too much on my plate right now. Like, I'm just trying to keep my head above water. So we went and, you know, we went through the way to understand each other's perspective. And I'm like, wow, there probably is a lot on your plate. And let's prioritize our relationship as well. So, yeah, but that we do get in those kind of ruts, right? Where there's a lot going on in life. Maybe your spouse just has this newfound passion for something. You know, Jen and I, Mark and Jen and I are working on a brand new project that we'll share with you guys in the next little while. And it's super exciting and we're super passionate about it. And it can become consuming and it can make things even out of balance, even if it's something really positive. But we need to make sure that we are prioritizing the relationship, keeping communication open, supporting each other and understanding each other, right?
Didn't we just have a conversation right before we started recording this? And we're like, you know what? This project is really great. And I was saying, I had to have some conversations with my wife about how we need to have some boundaries and make sure that this isn't becoming too consuming. And you said, didn't you say that you had to have a very similar conversation with your husband?
Yes. And he had that conversation with me, even like, you know, this is great. Let's put it down and let's just snuggle and not talk about that right now. Mm-hmm. Fair enough, right? And so sometimes we think that we'll just focus on the marriage later when it's more convenient or when we're done going through this really hard time. So it may be a really positive time, a really time of growth or a time of like a lot of interest in something. And it also may be a really challenging time. And you're like, I just got to get through this. I just got to get through this pandemic. I got to get through this unemployment phase. And then I can work on my marriage. And so how many times have you guys felt like that? There's simply maybe something much more rewarding, important, or interesting going on somewhere else. And do you think that your spouse has maybe felt that as well? There's just maybe something more rewarding, maybe something more important, or maybe something more interesting outside of the relationship right now. That's not necessarily to mean it's a bad thing, but we do want to make sure that needs are being met and that we revive what might feel like a stale marriage. So, Mark, what can we do to turn this around?
So the first thing that I came up with, I wrote it down. And I was like, okay, this is a good thought. It's a good suggestion. And I actually want to make sure that I'm thinking about this right. Because immediately, like, as I'm looking at my notes right now, I'm thinking, okay, am I only thinking about it from my perspective here? The first suggestion I'm having here is, okay, you need to protect your marriage from your kids and your career. Oddly enough, I hadn't really thought of it in that sort of context until I read this book a few years back. It was called Fighting for Your Marriage. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to remember the author's name. I think it's Markman, Stanley, and Bloomberg. And don't quote me on that, but it was a good book. I liked it. But it describes that you need to almost protect your marriage even from your children. and it might mean things like scheduling time for sex or creating boundaries with children, having some better expectations or plans. And I started writing this down. And like I said, I was looking at the notes right here. And you know what? We were just talking about how I had this conversation with Jen and we were having to have some boundaries. And I said, okay, well, why don't we schedule some time out for us? And Jen was like, I don't want to have to limit when I can work on things. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. This is an interesting argument here, because here I am suggesting this as a solution and it makes sense to me. And I want to ask you, Heather, is this, you know, like I'm recognizing that I need a little bit more structure than mm-hmm. my wife, Jen, does. And Jen really does not like structure. So I don't know, is this a solution for everyone? Is it best? And I want to make it very clear. I'm not trying to like say, ha, if Heather agrees with me, then I'm right. And I can go over to Jen and say, ha, do you see Heather agreed with me? I'm just wanting to examine, is this a universal principle to say, create some schedules, create some structure around needs? Is that absolutely needed everywhere? If you need to protect your marriage.
No, I don't think it's always going to be that answer, but I do think it works more often than not. So yeah. I think that for some people, if you're both kind of the free flowy, we don't want to have structure, we don't want to have boundaries, and that works for both partners, great. Then you mm-hmm. found what works for you. The heart of what we're getting at with this is find out what works for you so that the relationship is healthy and strong and has a level of protection, right? And if you know that like you're both just going to somehow make time for each other in the day, then great. Most couples I know though, do not fit that model. Most are not both the free flowy. I don't want schedule. I don't want, you know, some boundaries here. Most people have to have boundaries. And in a way, if like you look at like almost anything else in life, there's still schedule, there's still expectations. Like you look at the workplace, there's schedule, there's expectations, there's deadlines. And with kids in sports or something, there's a schedule and there's expectations. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't create protection of our own schedule and prioritize that, then it's like we'll get overrun by everything else that's demands on our time, right? The work, the career, the kids, the church involvement, the community involvement, whatever it is, right? And so I think that for most people, it is the right answer. Oftentimes too, you may be someone that likes boundaries and likes schedule and likes predictability, and you may attract someone that's less so because you like their spontaneity, you like their free flowing nature. And so that kind of like opposites attract is often very true. So that may work really well for you, or maybe it works really well for your spouse, but you still have to find what works together for both of you.
Yes.
And I've seen like not when working with couples that we are helping them to restore their relationship and to revive it, that this is a powerful tool. And then once it's more of a habit, just like anything, like if I was just going to have like this loose thing of like, I'm going to be active today. No, it wouldn't happen. I have to say, I'm going to exercise in the morning at this time. Right. So I think until that habit is established, then having some more structure to support those habits is really helpful.
Sure.
What do you think?
I'll tell you how Jen and I ended up resolving it, because it would seem like an impasse if I'm like, okay, why don't we schedule out some time for each other? And Jen's like, I feel like that's too controlling or limiting. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of got into more of a discussion of like, it became okay if I went go to Jen and say, hey, it's really important for me to spend some time together today. I know you have some work. How can I, you know, what do you need to get done? How can I support you with what you want to get done? And then the conversation is just fine. Like I didn't have to, you know, go to Jen several days in advance and say, okay, Thursday evening, we're going to, you know, we're going to spend some time together and whatever that happens to be. You know, the day of, I might say, hey, this is going to be really important. I'm feeling like I need to connect. And what do you like to get done? And how would you like some support? That worked for us. And Jen was very willing to meet me in the middle there, even though she doesn't like to have a lot of that structure on the long term. So it was still some amount of structure and some clarity and expectations and some communication, even if it didn't look exactly like we're prescribing it right here. Because I know a lot of experts out there might say, schedule time for sex, schedule time for the relationship.
And right. That, and they'll do it for like a whole week or a month. I don't know that that's a huge amount of people that actually do that, but if it works for you, awesome. What we don't want to see that we've seen with many clients is that like the kids' sports and the kids' stuff is like ruling the family, and like soccer or wrestling or whatever it is like the thing, and their relationship is non-existent because they're giving everything to their kids. Mm-hmm. And that's not healthy for the kids, and it's not healthy for you. It puts you guys in a situation where, you know, the marriage then suffers and you get to the stale state, and then it declines even further to the point where now everything is a huge mess for everyone. So it does need to be prioritized. It does need to be protected.
I think you mentioned like a couple of weeks back, you had to make some adjustment with kids' sports in order to protect your marriage. I seem to recall you talking something about that in terms of a solution for you and Ben.
Right. Yeah. And that was just us having to come together. Like last year we had 3 boys in soccer. We had 3 girls in ballet, and it was like every night we were just coming and going, and that did not work for our family. We had to have boundaries around family time and then boundaries around couple time. I know, Mark, you guys have talked about like time when you are not a parent, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
After whatever time, 8 p.m. or whatever, you're like, kids, we are not your parents anymore. Like, they're not your parents right now. It just made me laugh when you shared that. But it stuck with me that's a very specific boundary of like, you know, this is time for me and mom, or this is time for me and dad. We need this time right now. One of the things that Ben and I definitely have boundaries around as well is evening time. There's definitely that time is just for us. And then date night, every single Friday is date night, and we protect that. And if we can't do it then we move it to somewhere else, but we make sure that it happens. And sometimes, you know, you hear it's hard to get a babysitter. It's hard to figure that out. Or maybe even, you know, money is a concern. I see a lot of couples not going on dates because they have this idea of what a date needs to be, an expensive dinner, candlelit, movie, I don't know, all that stuff. It doesn't need to be that at all. It needs to be one-on-one time in a way that you enjoy connecting with each other. That's unique to you. It's going to be different for everyone. For Ben and I, we love going hiking or kayaking, and like those things don't cost us any money. You know, we loved being out in nature and going on a walk, those kind of things, or playing a board game or something like that. But yeah, even with the finding babysitters, there's ways to trade with other families, to trade with, a, you know, your brother or sister that might be in town, with the in-laws, to have grandma, grandpa come help, you know, or to find a give and take, you know, like, hey, if you don't mind watching my kids, I'll come clean your house on Saturday morning. You know, I'll help with yard work or something like that. There's all kinds of creative ways that you can do it. If it's important enough, you'll make it happen.
Yeah. I know we've gone and done babysitting exchanges with other couples at many points in our life. And that's how we made it work, just to have some time for my wife and I.
Yeah. Now, I had heard this from a relationship coach, that you should not talk about business things when you are on dates or in other one-on-one time. Business talk, meaning chores, responsibilities, like plans, parenting issues. Like there's two things that kind of should be nixed from those conversations, which are this business talk and then talking about kids, which I'll admit I'm guilty of both. Sometimes it feels like we're just coming and going, and it's like the only time we get to really talk about things. But I think that what happens when you reduce that, at least, or at least, you know, make some boundaries around that, is it creates more time to actually connect as a couple and discover who you are as a couple, and a chance to just kind of put everything down and just be together, which is being present with each other. All right. That brings us to make interactions rewarding. Mm-hmm. So we talked about how when it no longer feels rewarding to be in the relationship or to interact, it doesn't feel interesting, then that leads to this staleness. So to counteract that, we want to make our interactions rewarding. Mark, how does that look like?
So like you mentioned here, Heather, like we were talking about, lots of bids for attention might go unmet. And the couple learns to stop, you know, putting out those bids for attention. I think it's really important to identify a lot of those things, because I do think that in many cases, it's not intentional. I think this is much more like, maybe perhaps I've seen a lot of situations where these bids aren't recognized for what they are. Maybe one partner is a little bit quieter about their needs. Maybe one is a lot more outspoken. But, you know, I think it's a good idea to start there, just discussing with your spouse about all those bids for attention. Like, how do I communicate a need for attention? How do I communicate what I want in the relationship? And to just kind of see whether you're missing some of these bids to connect and be a couple. We've been talking about these obstacles and the need to protect your relationship. This is almost like the opposite of it, is we're trying to find, you know, the suggestion is about finding ways to say yes to your partner in a lot more ways. If one of you needs a little bit more physical intimacy, great. How do you say yes to that? Someone need to be able to snuggle up and watch a silly movie together and just be comfortable and calm. All right. How do you say yes to that? Do you want to drop everything? This is my wife quite often. She wants to drop everything and go out on an adventure. Let's go, you know, let's go to this cave nearby. Let's go play in the river. Let's go drive an hour. Our closest IKEA is an hour away, but my wife loves going to IKEA. And so maybe we'll just be like, okay, we're going to IKEA, even if all we do is wander around and sit on the couches there. You know, you need to find a way to say yes to those things that are really exciting for your spouse. This is how I think that you're going to make a lot of these interactions much more rewarding. And the better communication you can have around how you ask for this and how you can make it something that happens, that's really kind of the foundation of like what you can do to make this feel really fulfilling and rewarding in these interactions. And I thought, like, okay, I had to look at this and say, okay, am I struggling with any area, any aspect of this in my relationship? And I wanted to put that question to you. I mean, do you and Ben sometimes deal with some issues here? Are there things that perhaps some bids for attention that are missed, or maybe areas where maybe you guys could be a little bit better about saying yes?
All the time. This is part of that, you know, that really stage of life that we're at, but also just getting to know, you know, getting to understand each other better, getting to know each other. And so that's why I have found for me, what works for me is just checking in with him. Mm-hmm. I tend to be in a little bit of la-la land and a little bit aloof maybe. And I'm thinking everything's great because Ben tends to hold everything inside. So he may be asking for more closeness or connection, and I might just be flat out missing it. And I hear this sometimes, you know, like my wife wants me just to read her mind, or, you know, he just wants it all the time. So how do I know, like, when enough is enough, you know, like these different things. And sometimes it's not very communicated very clearly. So, I'm doing like this check-in with him, which is uncomfortable to him, but I think for us right now, it helps get it out so that I know where he's at with things. You know, like on a scale of 1 to 10, Ben, how do you think we're doing with our communication? How well do you feel like we're meeting each other's needs? How well do you like our sex life? Right? Like what, like give me some feedback. And that works for us when I get like feedback from him by asking just really blunt questions that I can get a very clear answer from, instead of like, you know, beating around the bush or these kind of vague answers. And then when I hear like, oh yeah, our communication's definitely like not great. Okay. Well, why is that? What's going on there? What can I do to show you that I value you? I uncover some of that narrative or that story that your partner might have about you. Ben's recently was, I don't feel like my opinion is very valued, you know? And then I was like, well, what does that mean? Like, what does that look like? And then what would it look like for me to show you that I do value your opinion? Right. And to say yes to that more often. So now that I know what it looks like to him, instead of me just guessing or assuming what it might look like, I can say yes to him and demonstrate that with my actions, and making sure that I fulfill those needs a little bit more and that I make those really rewarding. So I hope that this is coming across clear as mud. This is a little bit of my process of like what I'm trying to do right now to actually improve this area is to uncover where we're at, what he's really wanting, how I can provide that, and then say yes when I see those opportunities coming up. And like I said, for him, these conversations are not fun. They're great for me, but not as comfortable as fun for him. So I do try to make it really rewarding, saying like, I really appreciate you talking about that. I really appreciate you letting me know that you would like to feel more valued by me and that you'd like your opinion to be more valued. I really appreciate that. And I'm grateful, you know, and then maybe a little extra snuggle time and make it kind of fun and flirty and make it rewarding. So that's a little bit of the process where I'm at right now with that. But when I do know that he has a need, it is about saying yes more often. That's it. It's just as simple as that. It's just a simple action step. When you see an opportunity to be more cuddly or flirty, or maybe more adventurous, or maybe more emotional, emotionally vulnerable, that you lean into that and you share that with your partner. This is what we call like the intimacy cycle, right? The more that you were willing to give, then the more they're going to be willing to give. And then the more they give to you, that feels really good. So then the more you're willing to give to them, and it gets you going in a really great pattern there that's going to create a lot more connection. Sorry, that was long, kind of a little long-winded. I hope you guys are able to follow a little bit of my process. Margo, as far as our clients goes, and maybe you guys can leave a comment and let us know, like, what do you feel like you might be missing in some of your bids to connect? And how do you think you could say yes more to your spouse that would help get you guys in a positive cycle there?
So you're asking about the clients and what we see there? Right.
Right.
Yeah. So a frequent struggle that I see with clients is exactly this. It's one partner saying, "Hey, I want something from this relationship," and the other partner is presenting all these very legitimate reasons why that can't be provided. You know, I'm too busy. I'm too tired. You know, the kids need me, or, you know, we haven't processed through this big hurtful thing right here quite yet. And so I don't feel comfortable being more intimate, more close. And at the same time, you know, I'll see with these couples that are trying to progress and make things better. Almost always the recommendation is, okay, like you were talking about there, Heather, there is that little bit of that intimacy cycle. And I say, okay, where can we start saying yes? How can we make that an okay experience? How can we make this safe, acceptable, rewarding, supported? And how do we, you know, create a positive narrative around this? But yeah, it almost always, I hate saying always, just because there's always going to be some sort of exception.
Yeah.
But almost always, it does need to start with someone saying yes to some of these requests somewhere. And so, you know, like what we're saying here, the point here is saying yes and being excited about saying yes really does go a very long way towards making interactions much easier, smoother, more rewarding. And I think that is needed when a relationship has become stale. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as a bit of a, you know, pull it back a little bit for the high level perspective, these things need to be done in order. One of the things that Mark and I really emphasize is make sure you solve the right problems in the right order. So we're talking about a stale marriage. If your marriage is deteriorated even below this, then these bids for more intimacy, snuggle, sex, you know, more emotional connection, deeper conversations, adventure, most likely would totally backfire. So you need to make sure that your relationship is in the level that can support those kind of bids for connection and intimacy and closeness. And so if you're not there yet, then there's smaller bids that you need to make that will be received now that you can then build upon to then get to the point where you're like this, like, I would love more sex, right? Right now, that may totally backfire with where you're at. And so you want to make sure that you're at a level in your relationship that will be well received and not backfire. Because oftentimes we see making too big of bids for connection or commitment too soon. So that's why it's really important to understand where your relationship is at and do what's needed to get to the level where you can make those kind of bids. All right. Now let's inject some passion into our interactions. So not only are we saying yes more, we're making them more rewarding, and we're also protecting our marriage and prioritizing it. We're going to put a little more passion in, because at this stage, when you guys are at this stage, and if you're not there yet, again, we'll help you get there. But if you're at this stage, passion is, of course, the opposite of staleness. Mm-hmm. So Mark has some great suggestions here on how to add a little more passion into your interactions.
Yeah. So like when we're talking about passion, you know, I'm not specifically referring to like passionate sex, though it might be that it's passion is all about how excited you are to engage, how much you desire to be in that situation. Mm-hmm. Like, I do think that we get into these ruts where it's like easy to say, like, you'll give a peck on the cheek to your spouse, to your partner before you go to bed, or you'll part ways and you'll give a very, very casual, hey, love you, see you later. And it doesn't hold any weight. So the peck on the cheek, the love you, it's there. It's technically physical affection, and it's technically some sort of words of affirmation. It's an attempt to fulfill a need, but it doesn't hold any weight. And if you really want your marriage to not be stale, you need these interactions to hold more weight to them. And what I keep using that word, it's the best word I can come up with, at least for this sort of thing, but it is all about passion. And how much do you desire to be in there, that moment? How excited are you to be in that moment? There's a lot of little things you could do to really convey that desire or that passion or that excitement. Like, don't just settle for the peck on the cheek. Like, maybe once a day you go in for a really big, wet, meaningful kiss. Maybe you're pulling your spouse aside and, you know, pinning them up against the wall, and you reach under their clothes a little bit. We'll be as PG as possible here in the podcast. When you, you know, the same example with the love ya, you know, instead of just get, giving the casual love you too, you know, don't just respond in kind, look them in the eyes, grab their face, tell them how much you actually love them and make them feel the weight of those words. That's really what these are all about. Whether you are injecting this passion into the physical affection or into your words or just in the mood and tone when you are greeting them for the day, I'll tell you, it is like a big deal if my kids are excited to see me when I'm done with work. And how much more meaningful is it when your spouse, who has known you for however long, is also excited? When it's like a big deal that you're done with work, that you're home, that you're ready to spend time with them. The more passionate you are with your spouse, I'm just going to say the more likely that it's going to be reciprocated, that you're going to see the same in kind. I know that I myself am a little bit guilty of this at times. I tend to be a little bit more even with my emotions, but I'll tell you that it's very, very rewarding when I see that excitement with my wife. It's just, I don't know how else to describe it. It's just, it's awesome. And I'm sure you all have experienced that previously. You know that this is what is needed.
Right. It might be that little flirty text, a little love note snuck in. You know, I like to put him on the dashboard of Ben's car, or sometimes he'll leave one on the mirror for me. Sometimes I just leave him a drink, like his favorite drink in the fridge with a note saying, hey, love you. Excited to see you tonight. You know, something like that, just little things like that. And I think a lot of the passion can really also be conveyed. Yes. In the excitement and in the interactions. I mean, think Jane Austen romance movie. Come on. It's just fun to be in love and to, it's exhilarating, right? The flirtatiousness, the passion, the romance, the stuff that makes my teenage boys say, oh, it's so gross. That's exactly what we're talking about. And it's also a great time to think about their love language too. Is it giving them a little gift? Is it spending a little more time with them, right? Is it words of affirmation? Is it physical touch? And then adding new and exciting elements into your life. So what can you do to stir things up a little bit? What can you do that would be something really new? Sometimes, Ben and I, we go on what we call an adventure date, something that's just totally new or different or off the wall for us. Sometimes that's like, we're not very artistic. So like going and doing like a pottery thing sounds like totally boring until we actually tried it. And we're like, this is actually really like getting us out of our box, right? Of what we think we can do and what we want to do and do something new together. We did an escape room the other day, and that was really fun and hilarious and just something totally different. And maybe even something that causes a little thrill or a little fear. Maybe it's going skydiving. Maybe it's, rock climbing. To me, that's terrifying. But doing something new or exciting together. So the relationship may be old, you may have been together a long time, but sharing new experiences really helps you to find excitement for each other. If you have to solve a problem together, or if you have to help each other climb up that mountain or walk a mile around the lake, if that's, where you guys are at. Just different things like that help to reignite some spark and some sense of newness or adventure. So try something new, try a new hobby, try a new skill, do something neither of you has ever done before. Maybe one of you has always wanted to try it, and you can take turns. You could say like, this week, Ben, you get to go eat Asian food, because that's scary to him. We're going to try some sushi. And then for him, it may be like, hey, we're going rock climbing or we're going mountain biking. And I'm like, oh crap, here it comes. But it does bring in that sense of newness and excitement. So Mark, final thoughts here.
I have a big question here. I think it's really easy for us to just list off some suggestions. Honestly, I think that's the way a lot of podcasts, or if you looked up on Google, how do I revive a stale marriage? You just get a list of suggestions in a lot of places. And this is a really good thing that I've needed to make sure that I'm aware of when I'm giving suggestions in my sessions with clients. It's really easy for me to give an obvious solution. The better discussion often comes from an a look at why those solutions aren't working. Mm-hmm. And so if you're struggling with implementing these solutions, it's really easy for us to say, go be more passionate, go say yes more. And I can't imagine that you guys are all idiots and that these sort of things haven't occurred to you at some point. So why has this been difficult? What's getting in the way of injecting some more excitement into your marriage? And usually that sort of line of questioning is much more fruitful in determining how you're going to go about solving your problems with a stale marriage. We can apply this to a lot of problems, but we're going to apply it to stale marriages today. So, you know, question for all of you to consider, why has, you know, creating some boundaries been difficult? Why has injecting some more passion or excitement been difficult? And I'd love to hear your comments and maybe even some solutions to that in the comments section. Like Heather says, we look at the comments all the time.
Yeah. And what I also love is when you guys are commenting on each other's comments and sharing some things that you have found helpful. You never know how, you know, your knowledge of what you've been through the past 6 months or 6 years or 60 years could be just the exact answer that someone else is needing. So we appreciate you guys supporting each other in that as well. So yeah, go ahead and leave us a comment. Let us know what you feel like has been preventing you from creating more excitement in your marriage and what are you struggling with there? So we can guide you on that and you guys can receive some support from each other. And if you're wanting more help in our coaching program with these exact things, then go ahead and book a free call with us at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. And you can get on a free call with us and we will help you to have a truly thriving marriage, even if your spouse is checked out, not willing to work on it with you, having an affair, wanting a divorce, saying, no, we can't have sex. No, we can't have emotional connection. No, I'm not okay with whatever that is. We will help you overcome that and get there. All right. Now, our marriage mythbuster is you should tell your partner exactly what you want. Now, this one's an odd one to me, Mark. I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah. So,
because we often say this, right?
Yeah. I mean, we pull these from from comments and whatnot. And just to be transparent, Heather and I have a little bit of help with putting together some content. Occasionally we get someone to look through comments and find these myths. And so I looked at this and great. I love a good challenge where like some myth is put out there and I'm like, okay, let's take a look at this. And at first I looked at that. I was like, well, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you should.
You should tell your partner what's wanted. And I was like, okay, is this always true? And I did kind of come to the conclusion, you know, circumstantially, this is true. But, you know, I'm thinking like, what sort of scenarios might this not be the case? I do think that there are a few circumstances. I know I talk with a lot of couples who are in this struggling stage. If we're talking about NAPS relationship model, again, it's almost like they restart the process. And, you know, in that model, you started with this initiation and great, we're saying we're starting to be a couple again. And then it's this experimentation phase and you're trying to see, okay, well, what works? And I do think that in some of those early stages, perhaps as you are really trying to figure out some deeper problems and you're trying to figure out what's working, I do think that there are some cases where you may need to hold back a little bit. And I say that with a lot of hesitation, because honestly, I do think my general underlying policy is, hey, the clearer the communication, the better. I'm just going to acknowledge that sometimes some of the foundations of the relationship aren't quite in there to accommodate all those requests. Yeah. And I think that's kind of the circumstance where this might not be true, is when the foundation of the relationship is a little bit rocky and a little bit sick. So to, you know, I guess that's not quite the right word. Rocky is a better word. Yeah. Where it's a little bit rocky and it can't accommodate all the requests is the only real situation where I think that this is maybe not the case. I don't know. What do you think? Can you think of any other situations?
It's reminding me of what we were talking about earlier about the bids for commitment or connection too soon. So if my spouse was saying like, hey, I'm in love with another woman. I want to go get married to her. I'm done. There's nothing you can do. I'm totally checked out. And I'm saying, well, I want us to be together forever. And we made these covenants and these vows. And what about the kids? And I want us to, I want you to love me. Right. If I just said it like that, like, is it going to be effective? It may be exactly what I want, but is that the right way to go about it? No, it's just going to push him further away. And so I think that's a little bit more what we're talking about is like, yeah, like that might be exactly what you want, but is it going to be effective to share that right now or not? Mm-hmm. And at the earlier stages, like when you're trying to restore the relationship and get things going in the right direction, it often backfires or it's just ineffective. So it's more effective to go through the path process and make these smaller bids for connections, smaller bids for commitment that are going to help you get there to the point and the place where, yeah, then you can share exactly what you want and it's well received. I think that's a little bit more what comes to my mind with this.
Yeah, it's always better to, you know, be able to be open. It's, I think, exactly what you're saying here, Heather. It's to the point where being able to express your want is, I guess, a common goal, something that like you both want to be able to accommodate each other's wants to the same depth is, I think, when this really is just fine.
Yeah. I can even see it though. And we've had our clients do this where like, I would love for us to be able to be connected and to be committed. I understand that's not where you're at though. You know, so you can even say like, this is what I want, but I understand it's not where you're at. So it really is kind of a case by case basis and kind of how you're interpreting it, which is exactly why we help you cut through all of that confusion and guide you on exactly where you're at. Because of course, in like my relationship right now, I can say exactly what I want and that's like where I'm at. And that's a beautiful, well-received thing, but it may not be where you're at or even the past, the right thing or the best thing for me to have gone about at different stages of my marriage. So bottom line is know where you're at and what's going to be the most effective to getting where you want to go. And that's what we can help you with in our coaching. So hope you guys like this video. Give us a thumbs up if you did, and make sure you subscribe to get more videos just like this. And next week, we're going to share with you what prevents your spouse from coming back. So if things have deteriorated beyond a stale marriage and they're at the verge of it being final and over, and you're wanting to get them back, we're going to talk about what prevents them from coming back and how to overcome those. Thank you so much, Mark. And we hope you guys have a thriving marriage.
Hey, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.